Hi everybody, welcome back. We're in lecture four already. And I just wanted to give a brief overview of what we've been studying so far. In the first two lectures, we looked at the problem of abstraction, going from complicated things to simple things, and decomposing the problem into, you know, simpler problems. And we looked at an example of that with barcodes. We went all the way from the physical level of ink to the very abstract level of a product. And last time we started talking about bits and operations with bits and how we can implement these operations, how we can compute these operations, what bits are and why we need them. And so we said that we need this kind of very low, very simple logical language, which we call Boolean algebra, which we didn't call Boolean algebra, it's called Boolean algebra. And we saw, you know, what the building blocks of that Boolean algebra are. And so these bits, these zeros and ones that we saw, truths and falses, ons and offs, are basically everywhere. Wherever you hear the word digital, that means that information is encoded with bits. It's encoded in this discrete way. And, you know, the bits are very small, and one bit is not that much information, but if you have tons and tons and tons of bits, that makes up any kind of information that you need. And so, the iPhone and the iPod are, it can't be 32 and 260 gigabytes. I'm sure they're bigger now. The MP3 format is typically 128 kilobits per second of sound, and we're going to learn what all these words mean. But you see the bits in there. Bytes, a byte is 8 bits. You have digital cameras, you have pictures. You can buy them, and you can see that, this camera takes a 5 megapixel, 10 megapixel picture, so in a pixel is just 24 bits. And a mega is a million. So one picture, if it's 24 megapixels or if it's 10 megapixels, that means that it's going to be 10 million pixels in a picture. That's how much information there is in that kind of pictures. You have laptops, you have storage, and the storage is also in bits. They're gigabytes, so byte is 8 bits again. You have download speeds. When you download something, you can see your speed and how many bits per second, how much information per second your computer can download, and so on. And so last time we saw that, we saw images and storage and movies, but really everything is reduced to bits. Everything is at the very lowest level of bits. And at the very lowest level, these are the basic operations with bits, and everything else, all the other operations that we can do, are based on these three basic operations. And actually, you don't really even need three, you can reduce them to two. And we're going to see that today. Two. And so, these are your truth tables. If you have, these show any combination of two bits, of two logic building blocks, are in these tables. And you have ands, ors, and nots. And hopefully everybody has a printout of the table, because we're going to use it as we're going to do some clever questions today. So if you have a long, just as in math, you have addition, subtraction, multiplication, parentheses, you can make very complicated expressions. Here, this is the case too in binary. You can make very complicated expressions involving ors, nots, and ands. They can have parentheses, and so on. And the order of operations, if you have a big expression, you do the parentheses first, then you do the not, and then you do the and, and then you do the or. We also saw that we can actually, build bits. There's a very concrete way and very tangible way in which these bits are implemented. And we saw that a very simple way, inspired by Claude Shannon, are just simple circuits. And we saw that we can just say that if we have a truth value, a bit that is true, we can encode that by a switch that is closed. And it will close the connection between a battery, which is a source of current, and a light switch. And so when the light switch will be on, we will know every time the switch is closed, the light will be on. And that will reflect the fact that our variable is a true, has a value of true. If the switch is open, that will be a variable that is false. And that also is reflected if we connect a light bulb to it. We're going to see that the light will be off, which is equivalent to zero, which is equivalent to false, which is equivalent to off. And so we also saw a few symbols here, the battery, a switch, a light bulb, and there's not a lot of them, but it's good to know what they mean. When we see a picture, it's good to know that what those things are. So let's do a clicker question. This is a switch. So everybody change your subfrequency, please. Make sure when you vote there's a green light, that you don't have any red. You don't see any red, except the chairs. All right, so this is a light switch to Boolean. And the question is, a switch that is open represents a Boolean variable that has a value. And your option A is true, option B is false, option C, there's no connection between the switch and the value of the Boolean variable. Stop at one. Five more seconds. Stopping. Okay. Majority right answer. Given that I just said what that meant, I was hoping that would be the case. Okay. Next question. What do you get when you do the following operation? And the operation is false and paren, not true, or false and not false, close paren. Is that A, true, B, false, or C, it cannot be determined? Stopping at two. Okay, stopping. Sorry, I was getting distracted by the fact that C is more people have clicked C than A. Yeah, a random fact. I was just explaining why I got distracted. So let's see how we will do this. So I said that you do the parentheses first. So we're going to focus on this part. Okay? And within the parentheses, the people were awake. Yeah. Okay, let's do this one. Sorry. So, what if you have variables now, and your variable X is true, your variable Y is false? What will be the value of paren X and Y close to paren, or close to paren, open to parens, X and not Y, close one paren, or open paren, not X, close paren. And your options are A, true, B, false. Stopping at 2:30. Stopping. Okay. All right. I think that's good. Okay, so I'm just going to replace the values of X and Y in this expression, knowing that X is true and Y is false. So true, false, true, false, true. All right, that looks more familiar now. So we're going to do the parentheses first. This is true and false. Together, which is called NIM. Well, this is called NIM 5. But anyway, in NIM 5, the difference between the game we played and this one is that you only have five objects. You start with five objects, and the user chooses to take one. What does the computer do? So what is the right move? If your opponent has chosen, there's five objects, your opponent has chosen to take one, what do you do? Okay? Or what does the computer do? If you're the computer, what would you do? What's the right move? What's the right next move? A, to take one, B, to take two, C, to take three, D, it doesn't matter what you do or what the computer does, because there's no move that can guarantee its victory, or your victory. Stop at 1:30. Good job, I mean people who have the majority voted the same as the majority answer. So what happens when we have five left? Who wants to tell me what the strategy is? One person, please? Yeah. Exactly. So then if there's five, my opponent has taken one, there's four left. What do I have to do to leave the opponent with three? Take one. Yeah. Okay, good. Last question. Well, in this section. Which of the following words is not a portmanteau word? A, bit. B, spork. C, cyborg. D, sandwich. E, brunch. I'm going to stop at 1 minute. I can hear the answer. It's in the air and in the sound. Stopping? Okay. Majority answer is the right answer again. Good. All right. Any questions? Comments? Everything's cool? All right. So, we finished last time by playing this game, and you guys basically beat me at it because because you're so good, and we saw that there's this game, and we wanted to give an example of a real life problem. This is real life, and this is a problem in real life, and we want to encode it. We want to make for example, a robot that would play Nim with us, and we want to know, we want the robot to think, and we want the robot to know when we won and when the robot won and what's happening. And so we took an example, and we're actually going to try to make a little program today that is actually a circuit that plays Nim with the user. And so we saw that we saw the rules, and you guys look like you know the rules. And so let's try to make a Nim 5, a circuit that plays Nim 5 with the user. And so we're going to try to figure out a strategy. And we're going to try to encode that strategy in a circuit made with switches and lights and wires and electricity. And so we want to figure out how we can beat the user. And we're going to be the computer this time. I know you usually play against the computer, but this time we want to be the computer engineer, the person who actually makes the circuit. And we're going to make this circuit that will be the computer, which will play against the user. And so we're going to give the user the option of taking one or two objects. And there's probably going to be two rounds because we have five objects left. Okay? So we're going to show the options of the user with a blue rectangle and the state of the game, what's actually happening, with a green circle. And so right now, our situation is that we have five objects left, right? That's how we start. All right? And I'm showing the objects at the bottom there. So what are the options the user has? The user can take one or he can take two, right? What happens if the user takes one? What happens to the situation of the game? Computer wins? Not yet. So there's four objects left, right? The user has taken one. What should the computer do in this case? What's the right? Go ahead. Take one, exactly. So the computer definitely should take one. And what is the new state of the game if the computer takes one? Three left. Very good. All right, so that's our situation. Now, again, does the user have choices now? He does and he doesn't, right? We definitely know that the user has lost if we play in a smart way. But they still have a choice. You know, maybe they're a little slow, maybe they're a two-year-old kid or something, and they don't see that they have lost yet, right? And so they still have a choice of taking one or taking two. Now, what happens if the user takes one? What's going to happen? How many are left? Two. And so we basically won, right? Right? So in either situation, if the user takes one, the computer takes the other two and wins. And if the user takes two, the computer takes the one that is left and wins two. And we show here that the computer has won. And that's a situation that we definitely want, right? We are the smart computer and we want to win. Okay, let's take the other branch. What happens if the... if there's five left and the user takes two, what should a computer do? So how many are left if the user takes two? There's three left. And what, do we have a choice or... is there a better choice? So we have a choice of taking one or taking two, right? What happens if we take one? There's two left. Exactly, right. And what if we take two? There's one left and there's not really a chance to win because the user has to take one or two. So we're going to make the smart choice of taking one, okay? Out of two bad situations, we're going to choose the one that gives us a slight chance of still winning. So there's two left and the user still has a choice and maybe they'll choose one and then we can take the one that is left and win. If the user takes two, then there's none left and the computer loses, okay? So that's a situation that we can't control. Basically, if the user has taken two on the first round and they know what they're doing, they're probably going to win, okay? But this is our tree, and this is kind of like, this is how computers play chess, or I think some of the computers. So they basically try to anticipate what the user will do and go as far down as they can. Sometimes this tree becomes so big that no computer can actually hold the whole tree in the memory. But they try to anticipate this. And if you can do this for a game, you can definitely know, oh yeah, I want to be in one of these three situations. And so going up, you can see that in the beginning, the user taking one, that kind of sealed the destiny of the game for us. And we like that branch a lot, okay? So this is the game tree. Does this make sense? Okay, so this basically reflects the choices that the user has. And in code, see that we only show the user choices. We don't show the computer choices because the computer strategy is kind of encoded in this tree. Okay, so that's our tree. And so here we have the strategy of the game. You want to always leave basically the user with a multiple of three, and we decided that. What happens if the goal is to not take the last object? If the taking the last object you lose if you take the last object. What would be the strategy? How does the strategy change? Yeah. Yes, so, and generally speaking, what if you start with 100? What if you have the first move? What do you do? Okay, so generally you want to have a multiple of 3, right? Because if you have 3 left, you can take 2, and then the user has to take 1, right? If you have 100, you want to take 1 so that the user is left with 99, and so on, right? So that you want to have a multiple of 3. You want to be the one who has a multiple of 3. What if you can take 1 or 2 or 3 objects per round? So we had 1 or 2 objects. How does the strategy change if you can take 1, 2, or 3? Let's say NIM 10. You have 10 objects in the beginning. Let's take NIM 5. What if you have 5 objects? And you can take 1, 2, or 3, and you want to be the person who takes the last object. What is the right move? Go ahead.
The strategy is the same, but you're operating the units 4 instead of 3. So you want to be the one who has the last 3 instead of the last 2. So you need down the last 4 instead of the last 3.
The last 4 is... Okay, so what if you have NIM 5? What is the...
You take 1.
Yep, exactly. Okay, good. So you want to take a multiple of 4. You want to leave the opponent with a multiple of 4. Okay, and so on. Can somebody think of a general rule? This might be a little hard, but yeah. Let's skip that. Okay, now we have this game, and we have this tree, okay? And we know how to go from logic to circuit. So we need a connection between this tree and some kind of logic, because the logic we can encode into circuits, and we've seen how that works. So this looks a little hard, but I'm going to go over it and explain it. So imagine that each one of the circles or the rectangles are Boolean variable, our logic variable, which can be true or can be false. So in any kind of NIM situation, any of the circles or rectangles can be true or false. If we start the game with 5 objects, our 5 left variable will be true, because it is true that there are 5 objects left in the game. Okay? So in the beginning, we have 5 left, the variable that we use to encode, you know, if are there 5 objects actually left in the game, that is going to be true. So that variable kind of encodes the situation of that is at the top of the tree. Now, what needs to happen in order for 3 left to be true? So if we want that there be 3 objects left in the game, what needs to happen is that 5 left needs to be true, so there's 5 left, and the user has taken 1 object on the first round. And I renamed the variable, the actions of the user, which are take 1 in the first round, take 2 in the first round, take 1 on the second round, take 2 on the second round, okay? So if there's 3 left, if there were 5 left, and the user has taken 1 on the first round. And you can see this right here. 3 left becomes true if there's 5 left and the user has taken 1. And you know, logically it also should make sense. Similarly, 2 left is true if there were 5 left and the user has taken 2 on the first round. Okay? And so now we can write this very complicated, something that looks like very complicated, but it's very logical. When does the computer win? Well, if there's 3 left, so it's either this situation, either there's 3 left and the user has taken 1 on the second round, or the user has taken 2 on the second round, which covers these two situations, or there's 2 left, we're on this different branch, and the user has taken 1 on the second round. So this expression just says computer wins if becomes true, this variable becomes true, if those situations are all true. Okay? And the user wins if there's two left, and the user takes two on the second round, because they have taken everything. All the objects, and we're left with nothing, and we lose. All right? So this is the logic, and now that we have the logic, we have made an AND gate last time, we had made an OR gate, we had two switches in parallel, we had two switches in series that were an AND, we had two switches in parallel that were an OR gate. We can actually build this. And so this is the NIM circuit, okay? And there's a scratch, which I'm going to show in a second. But I just wanted to show you, it looks a little weird, but it actually makes sense. And if you go back and you say, okay, three left, there's three left, when there's five left, and take one, one. And so it makes sense that five left and take one, one would be connected in series, and at the end of the series, there would be three left light bulb. And let's check that that's true. So we have five left, and we have take one, one. So these are connected in series with this light bulb, which turns on when there's three left, okay? And in the beginning, it is a situation that there's five left. And then the user see these blue switches are controlled by the user. And the user makes their choice. They can either take one on the first round and close a switch. And when they close the switch, what's going to happen? If they close the switch, there's going to be electricity flowing through here and turning on this light bulb. And then the three left light bulb will turn on. So there are five left, the user had taken one, the computer has taken one, and there's three left. And so on. And you can actually go through this logic is equivalent with this logic. Okay? And you can actually go back home, you have the link, and you can play with, it's interesting to see kind of create bugs. Like, okay, we know that the user can only make one choice when they're choosing to take one or take two. But here, it almost looks like we can turn off both these switches. So we can make both choices at the same time. And of course, the choices are not going to make sense. But if you want to play it by the rules, you're only going to choose one of these switches. But you can play with it and see what happens. You can't really break it. But see, I mean, this was just for NIM5, right? We had five objects left. Anybody above 3 years old would get bored playing this game. So imagine NIM10. In NIM10 actually is very, I think it's almost impossible to do in Scratch with switches and light bulbs because it just becomes too hairy and too complicated. And there's all kinds of switches that need to be connected together. And we saw last time that we can have two switches that are connected together by a little stick that keeps them together. You need tons of those. It's very hairy. And so we need a different solution for, making, people have video games and there's all kinds of more complicated stuff. How do they do that? How do they make those? They definitely don't do it. They don't make it like this. Right? And so what we would like is to not see this kind of thing. We just want something very clean. We would like to have maybe a machine where we could have these switches. For example, the user would be presented with, okay, please turn off this switch if you want to take one on the first round, and please turn off this switch or turn on the switch if you want to take two on the first round. And so this neat, very clean, just switches, I don't want to see any wires, I don't want to see any connectors. And on the other side of the machine, there would be a little light bulb that would, there'd be maybe a red light if we won, and a blue light if a computer won. Okay, so we want to see this kind of thing. We want to see this very clean and neat structure. So, if we use the drawings that we did before, we would like to see these kinds of switches on the outside and just lights on the inside. The inputs would be switches, the outputs would be lights, and we would like there to be some kind of logic inside with ands and ors and nots, but no messy stuff. Okay, we want everything to be very simple and very structured. And we actually, again, we made a AND last time out of switches, but we can just, now that we know how to build it, we can just make a little box and put AND on it. We know what's inside. What's inside are the two switches in series, but now that we know how to build it, we're not going to worry about it anymore. We're just going to put an AND on it and work with that AND, and not draw the switches in series all, every time. So here you see that, you see how the logic works. AND receives, if it receives no electricity, zero, false, on both wires, it returns false. If it receives electricity on only one of the wires, it's going to return false. And if it receives electricity on both wires, it returns true. And this is very consistent with your tables that you printed out. Same thing, OR is two switches in parallel. If on either switch, if on either entry input, there's electricity, there's going to be electricity on the output, because OR works that way. And not just if there's no electricity, there will be electricity at the end. So not false is true, and not true is false. Okay? Any questions? All right. So let's try to, we definitely need a new approach of working. We need to be able to make things more complex. And simple things are going to be a little harder, but complex things will be much, much easier. And so it's a trade-off that we will be working with. And so, let's see. The idea is to make a, right, before we use switches to control electricity, now we want to make electricity to control switches. So kind of like the opposite problem. So this is a relay. I call it a magic box because it looks like it does something magic, but once you understand what it's doing, it's very interesting and very useful. And you have a switch inside that you can't really see, and there's a wire going in. There's actually two wires going in. And here's how this works. If there is electricity on the lower wire, everything's cool, everything's fine, the switch is closed. This little coil acts like a normal wire. There's nothing special about it. And just the switch is just closed. And, you know, if we connect the light bulb, the light will go on. Now, the interesting part is when there's electricity on the upper part of the relay, when there's electricity flowing through the coil, what happens is that it's almost like an electrical, it's almost like you plug in a magnet, and it becomes a magnet when there's electricity flowing through it. And what that would do is this little wire is very light, and it's going to attract the wire and open the switch. Okay, so every time there's electricity through the coil, this switch will be open because this thing is going to act like a magnet. And so if we have a light bulb connected to it, that light will be off because the connection between the electricity and the light will be disconnected. The light will be disconnected from electricity. And so let's see how it works in detail. Let's see that we have this circuit, we have our battery, and we have a switch here. And this switch basically controls if there's electricity going through the coil or if there's no electricity going through the coil. So we want to know what the light will be in this case. And so if A is false, right, it's an open switch, what do you think the light will be? The light will be true because there is no electricity flowing. There is no electricity flowing through a coil. It just acts like a normal wire, and this switch is closed, letting electricity flow through, and so that turns on the light. Okay, cool. Now, what happens when the switch is closed? When A is true. Okay, so what will happen will be that A lets electricity flow through the coil, it becomes a magnet, opens the switch, doesn't let the electricity flow through to get to the light bulb, and that will turn the light off. Okay? So far, so good? Okay. So now we can use basically current to control a light switch, which is a little bit the opposite problem, which is very interesting. Okay, let's see what about this thing. What happens when A is false and B is false? What happens if they're both open? What happens to the light? Can you figure it out? Okay. So, you say false. This coil is not a magnet, so this light switch is closed, which means that this coil is a magnet, which means that this switch is open, so there's no way electricity can reach the light bulb, which means that the light will be false, just as you said. Okay, good. Let's move on to the other possibility, the next possibility. A is open and B is true. A is false and B is true. What happens in that case to the light? Okay. So let's see. The situation that changed, so A is still false. This switch is going to be closed. And so this is going to be a magnet. This switch will be again open. And again, there's no way electricity can reach light. So it is false. What happens if A is true and B is false? All right, so in this case, this switch is open, but that doesn't... Oh, the fact that this switch is open means that this coil doesn't have access to electricity anymore. So this switch will be closed, but that does not help us too much because this switch is open too. So there isn't any way electricity can reach the light bulb again. What about if A is true and B is true? Okay, so not having electricity through this coil means that this switch is closed, and it so happened that this switch is closed too, which makes this light turn on, and it's true. And so what is this thing? You can click. You should click. Please. Uh-oh. Maybe I'll start this thing. Okay, so the question is, what is this thing? And the options are A, a NOT gate, B, an AND gate, C, an OR gate, D, an AND OR gate, which is a combination of AND and OR. I'll stop at 45 seconds. Okay, stopping. Okay, good job. Nice. All right, so what we can do now is we can just imagine that, okay, whatever is inside the box, we don't really care. We're just going to put a box around it and call it AND. Right? This is another way of building an AND gate. And we saw that we had an AND gate made of just the switches, which we connected in series. But this is a different way of making an AND gate. Now we know how to build it. We are not going to care about that anymore. You know, if we ever need to build one from scratch, we're just going to go back to the lecture notes from lecture 5, lecture 4, and find this, you know, how to connect the relays. But we're not going to worry about it. We're just going to put a box around it and call it AND, and we're going to work with that from now on, okay? The same thing for NOT, right? We saw right in the beginning, just one relay has this wonderful property of making a NOT gate, which we were not able to do just with switches in parallel and in series. We are not able to do that, so relays are more flexible. The AND was more complicated, but this time we can make a NOT gate too. So that's cool. We like that. So basically, here, you see if A is false, the input of the gate, basically, the input of the box is false, the light will be on. So it took a false and it turned it into a true. And if A was true here, it took a true and it turned into a false. And the reason why this was false was because the A being true just made the coil become a magnet. And that opened the connection between the battery and the light bulb. Okay? So that's a NOT gate. We're going to call it a NOT gate. We're going to know how to make it. And we're going to just work with a NOT gate from now on. And this is just the beginning of what I was telling you. You have this very basic level, and then you work at that level. You kind of make the stuff that you need, the knots and the ends and the ors, and then you assume that you know those things. And you just work with knots and ends and ors. You don't have to go back all the way to relays and switches and wires. You just connect these higher level things together. Okay, let's try, so the NOT gate is also, you know, you have the truth table for it, which you've seen before. And what it just does, it just inverts it. So sometimes in electrical engineering, they use this symbol for NOT gates. Now you have this very interesting idea of putting gates together. And so this is the, starting to build with the basic blocks. As I said before, we know how to build an AND gate. We're not going to worry about what's inside. We're just going to take the AND gate and put a whole bunch of them together and build a bigger, a higher level gate. And so now it's very easy to link these things together. So this is a way of linking things together. We could have two inputs, A and B, and we could put NOT gates here. We can put the outputs of the NOT gates could go into an AND gate. Let's see what this thing does, actually. So let's fill out this table. And the white box is just because I use Windows and my software is on a Mac. It should be an AND gate. It should be the same thing. But let's just draw real quick. Let's make a table. And at any point, if you want to know what a gate or what a circuit does, just build a truth table for it, and you're probably going to figure it out. So A and B are the inputs of our big block gate. And so, again, another nice thing about binary is that it can only have two variables, can only have four possible values together. So it can, you know, A and B can be either both false and true, true and false, true and true. What is the output of this gate? Let's call it, okay, it's called C, right? What is C if A and B are both false? Okay, so I think I have that. Okay, so if the A and B are both false, the NOT gates will turn them into trues. And then here we have an AND gate. True and true will be true. Going through a NOT, it'll be false again. What happens if A is false and B is true? Okay, so for some reason, all right. Let's just ignore this. That's not what I wanted to do. All right, so if A is false and B is true, the output of the NOT gate for A will be true. The output of the NOT gate will be true. If B is true, the output of the NOT gate will be false. These both go through an AND gate, which output is false here, right? True and false will be false. Going through a NOT gate will be true. Ignore the diagram. Okay, what happens if A is true and B is false?
True.
Okay, so A is true. Going through a NOT gate, there will be a false. B is false. Going through a NOT gate will be true. The AND gate will get a false and true, which will be false. Going through a NOT gate, it will become true. And if they're both true, Okay, so A is true, not through a NOT gate, it will become false. B is true, going through a NOT gate will become false. False and false will be false. Going through a NOT gate, true. Okay? So same clicker question. Bring out your clickers. What is this gate? It's A, an AND gate. B, a NOT gate. C, an OR gate. D, an AND OR gate. I'll stop at 40. Stopping. Okay, that is the right answer. If you compare your tables, sorry if you don't have your tables with you. I mean, yeah. Hopefully everybody had their tables. Okay. So what do? We build a, we build a NOT gate, an OR gate, right? Using NOT gates and AND gates. So this is what I meant when I said we actually don't need all three of ANDs, ORs, and NOTs. We can just use ANDs and ORs, and with ANDs and ORs, we can build ANDs and NOTs, and we can build an OR gate with using NOTs and ANDs. Right? And so we only need NOTs and ANDs, basically, to do everything that we ever need in binary and computers. So again, taking this logic, and we now have the little boxes. We have the boxes that the AND box, the OR box, we have the NOT box too. We're not going to use it here. We can actually build this in a more easy way. And you know, on a very high level, this is what it would look like. We just have, let's take an example. Three left is here. Okay, let's take user wins. When there's two left, and the user takes two on the second round. So user wins is an AND gate. And there's two left that goes into the AND gate, and there's user takes two on the second round that goes into the AND gate. And we don't have that tedious big circuit. We don't have relays anymore. We don't have switches. We only have nice AND OR gates, and not gates we don't have in this case. But we just have this very clean translation from this logic to circuits. Okay, and this is a little clearer to see than the previous one. Now, if we were to make a gate, now we have this concept of an AND gate, of a NOT gate, of an OR gate. We don't necessarily need relays. We made it out of relays and of switches and so on. But we can make it out of anything. We can make it out of, dominoes or DNAs. There's actually... And I'm going to actually show you a video where Michael Littman actually made gates out of dominoes. Let's bring this up. All right. And you know, you can try to check what you know about ANDs and ORs and NOTs to sort through what you're going to see.
This short video is intended to show how everyday objects can be used to make logic gates. First, dominoes. Here we use two rows of dominoes to represent a bit. When the bottom row is top linked, that represents a 1. And when the top schematics for a NOT gate for an inverter. When a 0 enters the gate, the 1 exits. When a 1 enters the gate, a 0 exits. This construction lets a single piece of information propagate to multiple places. An OR gate takes 2 bits of information and outputs 1. If both input bits are 0, then the output is 0 as well. If either or both of the inputs is 1, however, the output is 1. Here we see the input 0, 1, producing an output of 1. Input of 1, 0, outputting 1. And input of 1, 1, also outputting a 1. Researchers at IBM experimented with molecular scale atomic dominoes. What we see here is a series of these atoms actually set up to propagate information from one place on the chip to another. When one of the molecules is moved, it sets off a cascade chain reaction that eventually flows to an output. Depending on where the input starts, different outputs are possible. The second demonstration is with marbles. Here, instead of 2 rows of dominoes, we use 2 tracks and a rolling marble to represent the bit. This is an inverter. A 1 bit turns into a 0, and a 0 turns into a 1. This is a splitter, taking one piece of information and propagating it in 2 different directions. This is an OR gate. 0, 0 causes an output of 0. 0 and 1 results in an output of 1. An input of 1 and 0 again results in an output of 1. And finally, input of 1, 1 ends up with an output of 1 as well.
Okay. So as you can see, you can use not only relays and switches to make gates, but you can use anything. Anything that you can use to propagate information can be a valid gate, right? As long as the ands and nots and ors obey the operations that we defined. And so here you have the, if you wanted to build that, if you wanted to play with dominoes, you actually have the layout, the way you need to set up the dominoes to make these gates. And so this is the NOT gate, you have the OR gate, you have a wire, which is just transmitting information. So the wire means you want to transmit, if you want to transmit a 0, it needs to, the information 0 needs to be transmitted all the way. So if you had dominoes here, it would just, you know, they would topple along and, you know, it would transmit the information 0 and the same with 1. So the domino OR gate, for example, needs 24 dominoes. Okay. Now let's think about what would a computer made of dominoes look like. So this OR gate, just an OR gate, needs 24 dominoes. The first Pentium processor, which was a long, long time ago, had 3.3 million transistors. So roughly 800,000 gates. Okay, 800,000 ors and nots and ands. So maybe it would need 19 million dominoes to make just this ancient processor that was used, you know, 20 years ago. So maybe not 20 years ago, but something like that, 10 years ago. So you probably, I don't know, how many of you have seen the domino competitions where people spend a week putting dominoes and then there's a, you know, it's recorded from above, and you can see the dominoes kind of toppling, and they make pretty patterns, and, okay, maybe some of you have seen them. They spent a whole week putting those dominoes together, and the biggest one, the world record, is 4 million, it might have changed, but it's in the orders of millions, right? This ancient processor needed 19 million, so more than almost 5 times as many dominoes. And people spend a whole week putting the 4 million domino together, okay? Now, the cool thing is that in the computer, the information gets processed. So the Pentium processors, so you probably have seen, it's in the giga, the something, 3 gigs of, so giga, gigahertz, right? That means that 6 gigahertz means that 6 billion times a second, it's almost as if 6 billion times a second, some little people would put the dominoes together, they would topple, and put the dominoes together, and they would topple 6 billion times a second. So to make a computer that would be just as good or fast as the Pentium processor, you need that kind of, those kinds of resources, which I think is a little impossible. You know, we don't have that many people, we don't have that much time, and we don't want to waste that kind of time. But if you wanted to build a domino made of a processor made of dominoes, a computer made of dominoes, it would definitely be possible. It would be very slow, but it would work. That could work. But that's just to give you an idea of how fast the processors and the transistors are in the computers today. And that, you know, transistors are actually a good idea. I mean, dominoes are not really a valid option to them. So, yeah. The Pentium did its computation 60 million times a second. So basically 60 million times a second, 19 million dominoes, set them up, you topple them, set them up, topple them, 60 million times a second. All right? So that's I think the answer to that question, if it could work, is no. Like, transistors are better, far better. And so it's really cool that you can, with bits though, you can encode all these different kinds of information, which is zeros and ones. And so, for example, you know, if an iPod has 60 gigabytes, that means that so 1 gigabyte is 1 billion bytes, and each byte is it's 8 bits. Okay, so how many bits can a 60 gigabyte iPod store? $480 billion, right? So 60 times 8 times a billion. Okay. Then if you use something like that uses 128 kilobits per second of sound, that means that for 1 second of sound, you need 128,000 bits. Okay, so that's how much information is encoded in 1 second of sound. So, for example, in that kind of iPod, you can have 62,500 minutes of sound, or 15,000 songs at 4 minutes per song. That's how they can say, you know, you can buy this new iPod and it can store 15,000 songs. You know, it's not like there's a slot per song. It's just general storage of this amount of bits. And they kind of roughly, you know, these songs are on average 4 minutes, and you can store, they know exactly how much, you know, what the format is, the MP3, and you can store that much information on it. If you have a screen with 320 by 240 pixels, so that means that you have a...
Each pixel stores 8 bits for the amount of red
8 bits for the amount of blue, and 8 bits for the amount of green. And so if you play with those numbers, you can actually form all the colors that are possible in this kind of format. And so each pixel needs 24 bits, right? 8 for red, 8 for green, and 8 for blue. 8 bits for each. And so the total, each pixel is made out of 24 bits of information for the color of each pixel. So to store one image of on this screen, you would need 320 times 240. That gives you the total amount of pixels. Each pixel needs 24 bits. That gives you a total amount of information, number of bits that you need to store one image. Okay, and then you have video, you have 30 frames per second, generally. You can figure out how many frames. So each frame is one of these pictures. So each frame requires, again, 320 times 240 times 24 bits times 30. That's how much information you need per second. That's why video is so big. And that's quiet video without the audio. If you want the audio too, you need to go back to the 128 megabits per second and so on. So this is a little bit of terminology of bits and bytes and what they mean. So this is pretty important. I'm probably going to ask you this question. But I'm trying to make red, you know, the title red, just so you guys know that this is, you know, important. I might need it for the exam, etc. So again, 1 byte is 8 bits. 1 kilobyte, which is also in capital K, capital B, is 1,000 bytes. Usually kilo means 1,000, mega means 1,000,000, giga means 8 billion. And so 1 megabyte will be 1,000 kilobytes, which is 1,000,000 bytes. And 1 gigabyte will be 1,000 megabytes, which is 1,000,000 kilobytes, which is 1,000,000,000 bytes. Okay? And so you can also work with kilobits, megabits, and gigabits. And that just means a kilobit will be 1,000 bits, and a megabit will be 1,000,000 bits, and so on. Okay? And so let's take an example. If you, for example, if you download a file, you probably will have a certain download speed of a certain amount of kilobits per second. So if I'm downloading a copy of Mozilla Firefox, which is 17.6 megabytes for Mac, how many bits does that contain? Well, it's 17.6 megabytes, which is 17,600 kilobytes, which is basically 17,600,000 bytes. And if you multiply that by 8, how many, because there's 8 bits in a byte, that will give you 140,800,000 bits. Okay? That's how many bits are in the that copy, the kit for Mozilla Firefox. Now, if I want to download it, let's say my downloading speed is 300 kilobits per second. So I can download 300,000 bits in one second. So that means 100,000 bits. So now the whole size of the file, the whole file is 140,800 bits. I can download 300,000 bits in 1 second, and I divide that by, I make that division, and it gives me 469 seconds. Okay, that's 7.8 minutes, about. Does this make sense? Any questions? That's just math. Okay, so let's take another example. What if you have a digital camera, and your digital camera is 10 megapixels, and you know that because, you know, you've attended this class and you've done really well. Every pixel is 24 bits. So, how many bits are there in each picture? So we have 10 megapixels, right? 10 megapixels, mega again is 1,000,000. That gives us 10 million pixels in each picture. So each pixel is 24 bits, and so that means that each picture will be 10 million pixels, 24 bits for each pixel. That gives us 240 million bits per picture. Okay, and so that actually is 30. We divide that by 8 because we know that 8 bits make 1 byte, and so that gives us 30 million bytes. That gives us 30,000 kilobytes, which is 30 megabytes per picture. Okay, that's how big a picture is. Now, you probably know that you don't really have, your camera doesn't take, you know, even if it's, let's say you have a 10 megapixels, it doesn't give you, the pictures are not that big. And that's because there's all kinds of setting on the camera of compression, and, you know, cameras are very good at making it smaller without, you know, seeming like it's not a good quality. And, if you play with a camera, you also see that you can take better quality, or, you know, you want to take maybe smaller pictures and more of them. You can set that up, and so it compresses it. But the highest quality that it can do for 10 megapixels is 30, it would be 30 megabytes per picture. That's how big it would be. And so let's assume that in your camera you have a gigabyte card. How many pictures can you take with that card? Well, 4 gigabytes is 400 megabytes. And we said that we need 30 megabytes for one picture. And we have a total amount of 4,000 megabytes. Right? So we have 4,000 available. Each picture takes 30. We just divide 4,000 by 30, and it can store 133 pictures. And again, 40 gigabytes is a pretty significant card. You're probably going to be able to store more pictures just because the pictures are usually smaller because of compression and so on. All right, so that's it for today. Thanks for listening.